few years ago, before hosting an edition of this programme in front of a live audience at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, I made the mistake of attempting a funny warm-up routine. The lesson I learnt was to leave stand-up comedy to the professionals. People like Stuart Lee, who was a front-row guest that night. He knows how to cope when a killer line is swallowed by silence. In fact, according to a new book he's written about his life in comedy, Stuart Lee actively enjoys the experience of dying on stage. His memoir, How I Escaped My Certain Fate, explains why he retreated from stand-up 10 years ago, co-created the stage hit Jerry Springer the Opera, and then returned to comedy and to television.
Later on, I'm going to be talking to you about how my tragic and ultimately fatal addiction to various forms of lethal, illegal Class A drugs has helped me to overcome my previous dependence on born-again Christianity. I wrote that joke 20 years ago. At the time, it seemed contentious. There's a kind of cliche of stand-up on television. People say that television eats up a stand-up comedian's material, but it doesn't if you just do loads of jokes that you also did on telly in the mid-90s.
An excerpt from the television show Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle. When he came to the studio earlier, I suggested that his book is largely about failure. So why does he enjoy it when his jokes fall flat?
I hate the thought that I've wasted people's time. I mean, I'm a parent now and I know how difficult it is to get out to see anything. So I don't like the majority of the room to be disliking it. But it is, you do feel you want there to be something at stake. And as you get better known and people trust you more, it means you have to make it, you have to contrive. You must have to contrive the problem, you know, to see if you can overcome it.
And the danger is death on stage. You use it in the title of the book, The Life and Deaths of a Stand-Up Comedian. That's a reference to that moment which every comedian faces. Mm. The moment when you die on stage, when there is no laughter, when you lose an audience. But you seem to kind of relish that moment. But, I mean, it can be heart-stopping, can't it? It can be an awful moment.
Well, the moment that I thought I really have to give up, which is in the book, was on stage in Liverpool somewhere where the whole thing had just gone so wrong that I let the heckler go up on stage and I just went and sat in the audience and kind of gave up. And I thought, I'll sit in the audience and see... I'll see how bad this can get, see what happens. Maybe something will present itself. And then the security removed him and sort of coerced me back on. But to no avail, it was terrible. But, I mean, I think, yeah, it is that obviously the laughter of loads of people is brilliant, but the silence of... a silence you have no control over is a terrible thing.
A lot of your comedy is very discursive, very slow as well, and exploratory. Very intellectual
they say now. Mm. They say it's slow, discursive and exploratory now, but 10 years ago they said it was boring and monotonous. It's interesting how that's changed.
Is that because you have because you had that time away and also because of the association with Jerry Springer, the opera, maybe the word opera has imbued you with a sense of gravitas?
I think it's easy to forget. If people do remember Jerry Springer the Opera, it tends to be as this, you know, cause célèbre of protesters. But before it was that, it was largely critically acclaimed success. And I think after that, critics assumed that there must have been some point to what I was doing in stand-up. Plus, in the 4 years that I had off, other people came through, like Ricky Gervais, who became really popular but talked about how they really liked me. So I think it was almost like I died. And, you know, when a rock musician dies, suddenly their back catalogue starts shifting. It was a bit like going away and then being feted by these people meant you could come back and be allowed to be better.
Feted by these people and also copied by these people. There's a suggestion in the book that Ricky Gervais's stand-up routine owes... Not only has he offered you quotes for the posters,
I explicitly say that there's nothing that he's copied. What I was trying to say in that...
You hear echoes of yourself in it.
Well, was that I hadn't minded being unpopular when I thought it wasn't the kind of thing people would like. But then when I saw, after getting famous in The Office, and I saw Ricky Gervais going well to 500 people with the kind of routine that I could have imagined doing, I thought, I should really try and do this. And I was 37 and nothing had worked out. So I sort of, that's the other thing. A lot of books by comics who've done something else, going back to talking about how they started again, they're like a sentimental journey, you know, like, I think I'll go back to the clubs and it'll be marvellous. Whereas I hadn't really got any money. I needed something to work out, and it was the only skill I had, you know.
It is a book about financial failure to an extent. You say that when you were working the clubs, you weren't earning great money. You work on Jerry Springer, the opera. Fantastic critical success. Goes not only to the National Theatre, but to the West End. And yet you used your money that you made for it to help defend the libel action.
Well, I didn't use it, but we didn't get the royalties because they were used by the producers to fight, you know, various legal cases
including the one against the Daily Mail.
Yeah, and I mean, and you pass a certain point with a big production like that where the assumption is that it will get on the road, it will go to America, and it will recoup the investment. And for one reason or another, it didn't really do that.
And I say you've returned older and wiser. And the critics would say, with the stand-up routines that you have been doing, you've also returned a more bitter man. Now, you maintain that you're not bitter about the success of people who started out as your contemporaries.
No, I'm not. I don't think that's in the book. But I think the interesting thing is that,
I don't think that comes across. I'm saying it's something that has been levelled against.
Yeah, well, I think that's because the character of Stuart Lee, the stand-up comedian on the stage, is slightly different to me, and I kind of forget that that's not immediately evident to people. And the character of Stuart Lee, the comedian on stage, would be bitter about other people's success and would feel sort of hard done by, whereas I'm sort of in control of that character, you know, and I have to sometimes give him something to push against. I have to make him annoyed about things.
What are the other traits of that character then? I mean, you know, he's very PC.
He is.
Stridently left-wing.
He is, but you get
the
feeling...
And quite smug about it.
Well, yeah, exactly. He is PC and left-wing, but you get the feeling he's only doing it to try and, like, win an argument and get the pleasure from that, or think he's better than other people, you know. I think, again, going through the transcripts is really interesting because you realise to what extent it is a construct. The character of me on stage is an amplification of a lot of the things that I think are worst about me. The sort of pettiness and the going on too long about things, horrible passive aggression towards the audience, and sort of conceitedness about his own cleverness. And, you know, in a way, acting it out on stage, you'd imagine would relieve you of the obligation to act out those traits in your own life, but it doesn't seem to have made any difference.
And how do you keep your distance from him, then?
Well,
by writing about it, in a way, the book is a catharsis, then, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, but actually, you know, the funny thing is, there's all... You know, for every good review of me, you can find someone posting on the internet who just can't stand it to the point where I sympathise with them. You know, they seem so angered by the material, bored by it, and just can't see the point of it. And I kind of do understand that, having done the telly show, and to sit and edit yourself for weeks and weeks, and to see all the things that you do and how irksome it must be if you don't like it. You know, I mean, I was in Bridport last night, and there was a guy really heckling who just hated it. He was going, get on with it. And I went, this is what it is, right? I can't change it. You just want me to get on with more of what you don't like. You know, but it's sort of difficult, as it is what it is.
Mel Brooks once told me that he was a jazz drummer.
Oh, right.
And he made the link between drumming and the delivery of jokes. And you say that most comedy is delivered in 4-4 times.
Well, I think, you know, it's sort of on the beat. You know, and that's why it's so interesting when people aren't on the beat, you know, or miss out bits of where the beat should be. And
I use the example of the Mighty Boosh.
Well, yeah, I directed the Mighty Boosh when they were a stage act in 1999, and it was really frustrating at first because you couldn't find where the beats were, you know, and they're sort of like free jazz drummers, you know, they're sort of, the laughs keep falling in areas, say, that in music would be microtonal rather than on the notes, you know. It's really hard to get hold of. But it's actually really difficult to do that. You have to know the rhythms, first of all, before you can get around them. And when you do one of those long improvisations or a really long Shaggy Dog story, you know that the audience have in their mind the knowledge of what the rhythm should be. And then even then, in the silence of refusing to deliver that beat, you can sometimes get a laugh just from not doing anything, because they know there should be something there.
You've done television, you've done stand-up comedy, you've written, directed, worked in opera, and have written a novel.
Yeah.
Where does it go from here, then? I mean, are you closing the book on comedy here?
Well, no, but, I mean, what's really great about having done this book about how I did those last three shows is all those little tricks are out there now, you know, and so I feel it's moved me on already. It should help me to avoid becoming a parody of myself, you know, because if you've explained everything you've done, you can't really go back over it.
Stuart Lee, his book How I Escaped My Certain Fate, The Life and Deaths of a Stand-Up Comedian, is published next week.